Hello, and welcome to the Tavern Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tenkart, your bartender in the OSR, your main proprietor of Tenkart's Tavern blog. And today, we have one in our series of fireside chats. We have Laramie. Is probably best known as one of our tavern mensches over in the Discord server. You've possibly also met him at the Game Hole Con, if you've gone to Game Hole. Laramie, welcome.
I am your chief antagonist. Here we go.
There we go. The man that brings cider to the Frog God's Mouth.
Well, you got to take your bartender, right? That's how that goes.
Dude, that's awesome. Normally, though, you're not supposed to, tip your bartender with buybacks of your own when he's behind the bar. Not that it stops me.
Hey man, I like changing it up.
That's okay. No, please. I'll buy back my bartender. He'll leave his scotch right in front of me like I'm drinking it.
That's right.
So that's the way it should be.
100%.
Well, Laramie, we are going to start you out with the five questions that I pretty much ask every bloggy. And then we will kind of sandbox it for a bit, if
Dig
that's
it.
okay with you. All right. So, tell us about your first RPG experience.
I would have been probably 14, 15, junior high, and had some friends. I grew up in a town of about 800 people, and so
Okay.
we played at a friend's house in the middle of nowhere. And it was, hey, try this thing that he had. And he was a high school kid, but your age parameter was a little skewed when you're in a community that small. And it was, I still remember, first character fighter. I remember just the visuals of the storytelling, fighting, your typical 10 by 10 room, treasure chest, skeleton kind of intro thing.
Yep.
Would have been first RPG experience. My fantasy background, though, I will. Everybody's got all these great stories of playing RPGs with their old man. Mine, actually, credit where it's due, was a whiny kid at Christmas begging his mom for HeroQuest, and
Oh, nice.
my dear mother having the time and patience to sit down and play that game with me for hours. So credit where it's due, that was mom bringing in the fantasy for me.
Wow, that's pretty damn cool.
Yeah. So there's both of them. That's right,
You
Pex. My mom's the best.
well, you see, with me, my parents, I should say, my mother did the shopping. I know that, but my parents gave me the Player's Handbook and the DMG and a high-end set of dice. I still have. For my birthday, after I was introduced to AD&D by my friend Kenny, I don't know, like my birthday's in July. I was probably introduced. It was in the winter time, so it was either January or February. And I would like borrow the books to read them at home, and my mother was just so happy that I was so into something and learning words that were very obtuse in the day before the internet.
I
And
on that on that I do remember, so during again growing up in the Midwest, all of the cultural things from the coasts took a while to get to the center of the country. So we got the Satanic Panic kind of in the early 90s. And
oh, okay.
previously aforementioned mom, I remember one of our younger friends, mom was completely convinced that, he can't play this game because it's devil worship and stuff. And mom went and borrowed all my books, say, hey, you're gonna borrow these. And she took them out in the kitchen with my buddy's mom, set them on the table, and said, "There you go. Point out the demon worshiping part of this." She said, "It's teaching these kids vocabulary. It's teaching them teamwork. It's teaching them math that I don't understand because, they go." But she's there. You go. Find the evil part of these books. And they had a nice long conversation, and that was the end of that. Jimmy never missed a game after that.
Now, see, we had the Satanic Panic a little late. Well, not late. I mean, it hit the city at the normal time. It hit my family late because my Aunt Norma, who was otherwise known as Sister Camilla, a Catholic nun who did not believe that Vatican II was right. So she was like full black habit, white coif. You know, all you saw was like the center of her face and her hands. You never saw any other skin on that woman.
Are you sure your aunt wasn't a ghost?
No. I'm pretty. and then the funny story about her is that she became a nun in her late 30s. Before that, she was a jet setter. So she was on the wild side before she became a nun.
Hey, each their own,
I guess. Yep. She stayed. My parents were up in the Poconos, as was my younger sister, and I stayed at home. I was like, I don't know, 16, 17. And Norma was visiting to watch my grandmother, her older sister. My grandmother's going a little senile. It was a hot summer day. I had trouble sleeping in my room upstairs. I didn't have an air conditioner because I was, you know, 16. So I went downstairs to the living room and slept in the AC. Well, Norma got bored that night, went into my room, and started pulling all my D&D books out. And then promptly called my parents the next day to tell them I was in danger of being a Satan worshiper. My mother, God bless her, called me and said, listen, Norma's going to be there for another 5 days. Just do me a favor. Because I was gaming every day. It's the summertime.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she was like, your friends will understand because they've met Norma. Just play science fiction or other stuff in the meantime. She wants me to burn your books when I get back. She goes, obviously that's not happening. Just wait out the 5 days. I'm like, okay.
Just humor your aunt and go play something else.
Yes. But just try not to stir her up. because with you, my mother was just thrilled that I was
reading
and social, and you know, junior high school and high school, staying out of trouble. She was very happy to have us have our weekly games or more often during summertime at the house here, because she knew where we were. Even my friends, she knew we were not, you know, you weren't getting into trouble.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you were socializing, and like, you know, she was like, oh, great, you got a great, you know, number of friends. We used to have a group of like 6 to 8 over, and she was thrilled by it. You know, you're socializing.
And problem solving and being creative. Because, you know, by that point, this would have been, like I said, kind of early 90s, mid-90s. And everybody's playing video games. Mom was really happy that I, you know, because, yes, I played video games. But she was happy that was time I wasn't spending playing video games. It was time I was spending with actual human beings.
Right. No, that was on my end, too. That was certainly my mother's throw. I don't think my father paid much attention, even at this point, what I do with the hobby.
Right.
But, all right. Well, then, I know you, so I know that Castles and Crusades is your thing, because I'm going to ask you.
See, you're wrong.
All right. What is your go-to RPG? What is your go-to RPG? What is your go-to RPG?
Hackmaster, all day long.
Oh, you're right. Fuck. Why did I say Castles and Crusades?
I don't know, man.
That's because I woke up about, you know, 10 minutes before we kicked the shit off.
No, man,
all right, Hackmaster. But now, is it 5e or, well, 5e is really 2e and 4e is really 1e. Which Hackmaster do you mostly play?
Currently playing mostly 5th. We played 4th. So, We played advanced. I think a lot of people that kind of came into the hobby in the middle, I didn't understand all the D&D editions. So we played with a smattering of first ed, second ed, all of it, because for the most part, it's all compatible, reverse compatible. Yeah. I grew up playing all of that. And then 2000, 2001 era. Third edition books came out. I waited until all three of the core books had come out. Went down to the hobby shop, bought all three, sat down, pretty much read the player's handbook, for the most part cover to cover. You know, you gloss over some things. For the most part, read character generation and all that. Thumbed through the GM's guide, picked them up and went, you know, this is not a game I want to play. And I took them all down at this point I was in college, I took them to a buddy's room he was interested in them, and I traded all three core books for a pile of Spider-Man comics.
Nice.
And that was my entire third edition experience. And about a year or two later, Kenzra Code came out with Hackmaster, and it got the Origins Game of the Year, which for being what I thought was just going to be a fun spoof game, for pretty high praise. So I picked that up, and we ran second edition or fourth edition Hackmaster, which is also compatible with all the old AD&D stuff because it's run off that same engine.
Right.
So we could take, you know, your monster manuals or any of the splat books or even adventure modules, whatever you wanted to use. And so we ran that up until probably 4 years ago. And then started picking up the fifth edition stuff, and that is now my go-to RPG. But in your defense, I have played a fair amount of Castles of Crusades.
Nah, dude, that was that's just cobwebs in my fucking head. I was just like, we've had this discussion to some extent in the past, and it's like, how am I saying Castles of Crusades?
Well, I think you've probably got more than one thing in your plate involving things that are not just my life, so I've given you an easy free pass on that one. No worries.
No, all right. Yeah. Dude, it's not going to cost me a cider next time around, will it? Okay.
I'll just drink one of yours before I get there.
Oh, okay. I'll never know. Dude, this four pack only had three on the shelf. I don't know what happened.
Hey, to be fair, the last three pack I gave you was a six pack before we got there.
That's please. It went down very well. I'm certainly not complaining. I knew I should have turned that off. Yes. And then, of course, in my background right now, somehow this turned on my YouTube in the background. So I'm hearing the Game of Thrones highlight thing. Oh, my God. Yes, folks, we don't edit these episodes. You hear this shit live. This is what happens when your barkeep gets no sleep. Oh, my God. And I've gotten pretty good at that because, with the phone, because my son calls multiple times per day. But let's just say I talk to him more now that he moved out of the house than I ever did when he lived here, which is not a bad thing.
I don't know if I know what my ringer sounds like anymore. I work nights, and I've always just got the ringer off and it's set on vibrate. So
right.
I don't even know what my phone sounds like.
Well, that's pretty much my wife, Rach, because she always leaves her ringer off at work. And forgets to turn it on even on the weekend. So we're trying to call her and she's, I don't know, shopping somewhere else. It's like,
now, in her defense,
I got to ring this.
Did she forget to turn it on or does she really just not want it to be on? Because there's a pain.
No. She forgets. Yeah, and I understand that. I used to leave my ringer off. Oh, actually, when I was working in an office on the job, I would leave my ringer very low. I don't. Now that I'm retired, I leave it very high so I can hear my phone no matter where I am in the house. But I used to always leave it just a few notches above silent, so there was a chance that I could hear it. But yeah. Oh. As always, that was fun. all right, well, let's move on to the next one. And race is class. I know Hackmaster is loosely based off of AD&D 2E.
Yep.
If I remember right. At least, correct. At least Hackmaster 4.
Yep.
But race is class. As a concept, as a play style, where do you fall?
It is not my jam. I am very intrigued by I think it was actually one of these firesides you had with his name is going to escape me, the gentleman that does Adventure Conqueror King that went through and explained.
Oh, Alex. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't think of his last name.
McCree.
Thank you.
I probably pronounce it wrong. One of those ways is wrong.
You cover your bases. I really liked his viewpoint on it, the way it deals with fantasy archetypes and his premise of having race classes instead of just pure race as class.
Right.
I have not got around to read. I've got my Butcher Cocker King sitting on the shelf. It is a book I'm eagerly waiting to rip into. Just haven't got the chance yet, but I really like that concept. But as far as pure racist class, I'm glad people enjoy it. Carl, I'm happy for you, man. Good for you. It's not my bag.
It's funny because Adventure Conqueror King, I think it's a very solid system, and I do like that take. Now, one of the earlier projects or products that I worked on for a very small publisher was, I think we called it Demi Classes, and it was racial classes. Like, I did a halfling cleric, like the, I forget whatever we called it, but it was a halfling cleric, a halfling fighter.
Sure.
And it had spells and abilities geared toward what you would consider would be appropriate for a race that is mostly farmers, small towns,
right.
You know, yeah. Hamlets. And I like that take. It's, you know what? It's not even available on drive-thru anymore. And I have like bits and pieces of it somewhere in my hard drive. Because why would I, you know, I wrote it. Why would I actually have a completed version of what I wrote? But yeah, I should go back to doing that at some point. It was fun, and Alex's take on it, I think, allows you to, as a DM at least, with your world building, to give reasons why there could be like a dwarven caster class, but it would be, I don't know, maybe based on casting runes. You know, it wouldn't necessarily be human centric classes, and I like that. It's a little work, but I like the idea.
Well, I think any time you're going to make up a rule set, I'm going to be presumptive and assume that's probably a lot of work just doing that anyway. Even if you were, you know, taking a project like you did and taking Swords and Wizardry and boiling it down to the bare bones, I'm sure it's no small amount of work.
No, because the firstly, taking something that is already a simplified system and bringing it down to something that can be fit onto four pages without losing the feel,
right,
was not easy. I think that with those four pages, people can take that as an inspiration to, you know, build up their own hacks. It's a very lean chassis to build off of, and I think that, you know, going forward, people will probably take advantage of that. But yeah, it's more work than I expected. I'll tell you that. I obviously haven't jumped on doing something similar again. But yeah.
But you have all this free time now that you're retired, so you know, you got all the time in the world.
No, just talk to Peck. Peck will tell you I don't have free time.
Apparently, Peck doesn't anymore either, man. That boy's been busy the last month.
Yeah, no, Pex is going to be busy going forward too.
Brother's hopping.
Yes, Pex, it is true. We got to clone Pex. We got to clone Zach Glazer over for our God Games, and we got to clone Pex. And then the world would be a better place.
Tinker's Tavern Biosciences Division.
Yeah. Well, you never know, man. We have like nearly 2,000 members here. We might have some bioscientists that could do such cloning. You know,
2,000 people. Somebody's got to be a geneticist.
Yeah. What are the odds? Probably not that good.
Probably not that great.
It's in theory, it could be, but maybe not. All right.
Why a betting man? I wouldn't put money on it.
No, I wouldn't either. Not unless you gave me really good odds. Like, I don't know, the Jets going to the Super Bowl anytime in my lifetime. Well, I shouldn't say that. I guess they went in, what, 1969?
70? I don't know, man. The Jets team I watch is Winnipeg, so. I'm a hockey boy.
Yeah. You know, I like, and we actually had this discussion at my local pub yesterday over lunch, that hockey is very much like soccer, except that it's on speed, higher scoring, and nobody fakes injuries. They're all legit.
I'm not gonna rip on soccer. I guess some friends that really enjoy soccer, but as far as injuries go, I think it's the exact opposite. I really enjoy after the season's over, everybody comes out with our injury reports, and you'll have, find out the guys we're playing with. There was a guy last year, the year before, had both his MCLs were out, still playing on him.
Ooh.
Yeah, just I as a healthcare person, I disagree with that mentality that I think you're doing yourself a lot of damage, but they have a very gladiatorial mentality, and it's just all go.
Yes. As opposed to soccer, where, two people going for the same ball, they get tangled, and the one guy goes down like somebody kicked him in the shins with a stiletto. It's like, dude.
There was a great clip I saw a few years ago. It was a coach, a soccer coach, that got hit in the head with a paper airplane, and he goes down like he took sniper fire. And Barry Trotz, the coach for the Washington Capitals, got hit in the head with a puck, and he kind of turns his head about 15 degrees and then goes back to watching the game. And he puts his hand up on his head, pulls it down, there's blood. And he just keeps watching the game. He's just holding his hand on his forehead just to staunch the bleeding while he's still
Right.
watching the game because the game hasn't stopped. It's
And just a different mentality going on. I mean, again, it's an Irish pub, so there's soccer playing.
right.
They have to put it on one of the TVs, even if
Yeah,
nobody's watching it.
but they play rugby too, man, and that stuff's off the chain.
Oh, rugby? Rugby or Gaelic football? Have you watched
Yeah,
Gaelic football? Gaelic
it's
football is more
amazing.
dangerous than fucking rugby.
It's amazing.
It's
There's
like.
a phenomenal Irish fest up in the Twin Cities every year that they do exhibitions of Gaelic football. Man, that stuff's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, back when I, before I made sergeant, when I was still a cop up in the Bronx, my commanding officer, who was, he was born in America to an Irish family who moved to Ireland until he was 18 and then came back. So he was American born with an Irish brogue.
Sure.
He was also the captain of the NYPD's Gaelic football team. And
Nice.
yeah, and he was the young he's the youngest to make captain in the NYPD's history. I think he made it just short of his 30th birthday or something like that. So and I talked to him. I used to be his driver once in a while, and I was like, Cap, you're in good shape, you're pretty athletic, why you're young, you ish. I'm surprised that you're not the one, you're the captain. I'm surprised you're not playing. He's like, "Well, lad, I've only got one kidney." I go, "What?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, I gave my sister my kidney 5 years, my kidneys 5 years ago. So my days of playing Gaelic football are over because you bruised your kidneys in that game." I'm like, "Oh Jesus Christ!"
Hey, that's a big city move, man. Giving up an organ, that's no joke. That's the real
No,
deal.
I. He had a very tight family, and I think I met all of his family because he was that kind of an individual. I mean, somebody who was going places and was in charge of a whole precinct, and at the same time, you'd be told, "Eric, you're going to be taking the captain to a." I had to drive him off duty to some kind of promotion dinner, celebrating some chiefs that got promoted to 3-star, and I was gonna be driving him, so I had to dress like appropriate business attire. And so I've got the keys to his unmarked vehicle, waiting on him. And then the sergeant behind the desk goes to me, goes, "Eric, you're taking the captain out tonight, right?" I'm like, "Yeah. Do you know that he's wearing a pink shirt with little white polka dots on it?" I'm like, "You're kidding me?" He goes, "No." So, and sure enough, he comes out of his office, and he's got his pink shirt on with his pale blue tie, and he's got these horrible shoes because he has shoes that are from Europe, like
Yeah.
they're squared front and all that
Yep.
stuff.
Yep.
And as he's walking up to me, and this is right in front of the desk officer and in front of some other cops, I'm like, "Cap, just because you're wearing pink doesn't mean that I'm going to give out." He's just like, "Oh, you motherfucker! Pink's a strong color. I'm like, maybe in Ireland. It's like, oh, fuck you. You drive. If you're nice, I maybe I'll buy you a drink later. Oh, jeez.
So let me get guys have the New York Police Department has its own Gaelic football team.
Yep.
Because being a cop in New York isn't dangerous enough.
No, not at all.
The next level.
I also knew I knew another captain later on in my career who we used to call him Spare Parts behind his back because he used to play for the hockey team.
Yeah.
And he had so many discs in his back damaged that he was out for like 9 months for surgery. And when he came back, everybody's like, hey, Spare Parts. He's like, fuck you all. We had to put pins in him and everything else. Again, nicest guy. I found that anybody of rank that was involved in NYPD sports activities was a down-to-earth, solid person that cared about the people that worked with them and under them. Sure. There was a connection that they had. Those that didn't have that connection could be a real ass and fool themselves, but these people were down to earth and didn't make a difference that they were the executive rank. They were still solid.
I absolutely believe that.
But I knew a couple of people on the hockey team, believe it or not. Just the NYPD loved their hockey team. I went to see PDFD play a couple of years back. Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah, Islanders play there.
You know, yep. And I watched numerous fights break out, but not on the ice, in the stands. And, you know, just, you know, PDFD, that certain rivalry you get. Because both jobs are dangerous. One job is, 5 days a week, 8 hours a day plus. And the other one is 2 days a week because they work in 24-hour days and 20-hour days. And for a lot of FD, being FD is your second career. Being an electrician, a plumber, contractor is their first career. So there's a huge rivalry that goes on just beyond. It's like, oh, the battle of the badges. No, it's jealousy on the part of a lot of cops because they'd love a part-time schedule too.
I got nothing but respect for all you hooligans because I want no part of any of that. Fighting fires in New York, dealing with crime in New York, I want none of it. I am perfectly content to go to my nice hospital job.
Well, and it's funny too because in the years that when I came on cop until I retired, like FD, their responsibilities changed because now they are almost every fire truck has at least one EMT or paramedic on it.
Yep.
So now they are rolling to all ambulance cases to stop the clock until the ambulance gets there.
Right. Yep.
But PD, NYPD, rolls to just about every ambulance case also. So it's just a huge overlap of responsibility when it comes to people that need medical attention.
It's also a little bonkers. I got a buddy that works in Cook County in Chicago, and there's places where the EMT crew shows up, and they are basically warned to wear headgear because they know that if the EMTs show up, they're bringing the cops with them, and people will just rain debris on them from above because they're bringing the cops with them.
Oh, yeah, airmail.
That's insane.
Yeah, no, we call it airmail, and I experienced that on my first night on foot post out of the academy, wondering why these ceiling tiles, like ceramic ceiling tiles, like for bathroom tiles, where they were, how they were landing around me as I was by the housing projects that were 20 stories tall until it was pointed out over the radio. I hear, in the confines of the 4-2 precinct, be advised, all foot posts, there is airmail in the vicinity of 163 and Webster Avenue. All units, be advised, take protection. I'm like, oh, shit, man, that's what's going on. it's nothing that you're taught.
Like I said, man, that is, kudos to you guys. That is something I want no part of.
Yeah. It's one of those jobs that you learn fast or you don't learn at all. So I think I learned okay.
I think you don't have a choice.
Yeah. I mean, well, some people don't have the ability to learn. Well, and they go through their whole career dumbfounded and blind. And that's maybe there's something to that. Maybe there's like, oh, well, at least they have no idea what they're doing. So maybe they're happy in their ignorant bliss.
Right.
But I don't know. I do not know. All right, well, let's move on to another question here then. Save or die. Not the podcast, but the actual, you know, game mechanic.
Oh,
where,
yeah.
Where do you stand on it?
I already gave Carl a shout out for the day. I'm not a fan. I respect it in the confines of what it can do. I think if a GM wants to put a player in a situation where there is, you know, life or death kind of situation, I think you can just do that with a certain, you know, instead of it being just pure save or die, why not just make it, you know, 5d10 damage or something like that. It's not for me. Again, I respect where it's coming from. It's just not my flavor.
Yeah, I mean, I've used it. I'm not enamored with it. I think it's like spice. Very little bit goes a long way.
Yep.
And I don't like it to be random. I don't like it just, oh, that trap in the hallway, that's a save or die poison trap.
Yep.
Why? You know, really, what does it do for the story?
And again, I think you can do it other ways. It is a nice, it's a hotkey. You can just push it and get what you want done. But like you said, you know, if you put it in, you know, once or twice a campaign just for the shock and awe value, I get it. It's not my way to go. It's not the path I would take.
Yeah, no, I agree. Oh, I'm looking at Pex's comment in the text. Too many Johns in the world. That's why they call him Pex. The joke at my local Irish pub is that everybody's named John. The owner, the bartender, at least there's Kerry John, there's Jonathan, John the Greek. it's like actually like being in the mob. John the Greek, you know, Kerry John the bartender, John the owner. There's just a lot of fucking, and I'm probably missing a few. But these are the ones that I deal with on a regular basis. So, yeah, there's a lot of Johns in the world. Yeah. All right. So you came into gaming in your teens. That seems to be like most of us, actually.
Yep.
with that teenage you, looking forward, looking to where you're still active in gaming in your adult years, and it's a bit more than a hobby. You're pre-wired into our Discord server and such. What would that teenage you think looking at what you're doing now?
Wait, you have how much income? What are you doing with it?
Oh, you're spending it on what? Okay. Well, yeah.
I think this is not uncommon at my particular place of employment. You know, people will sarcastically say, you know, living the dream. And I've pointed out to a lot of people that we all say that sarcastically, but man, I am. You know, I get, I've got a pretty healthy gaming habit. I've got a pretty exceptional, just, you know, home life, work life, everything. You know, and as far as that goes, as far as what I do in the hobby, I'm definitely not the creator that a lot of the guys here are. I'm happy to be a contributor financially to a number of those projects, as opposed to actually putting out my own content. But no, man, I'm excited to be in the gaming industry where it's at. And I am, if you would have asked me 20 years ago that this is where gaming was going and all of these hobby corner kind of guys making their own thing and cutting out their own corners, and what self-publishing has been able to do, whether it's through DriveThruRPG or Kickstarter or combination thereof. I think it's awesome, and I'm glad we are seeing this complete wealth of of gaming material. And even if you're only enjoying 5% of it, the sheer volume of it is something I couldn't have even conceived 20 years ago. So I'm really excited for what's going on.
Well, that's certainly accurate, because my gaming shelves are mostly filled. Well, I should say mostly filled. Half of it's probably from my first, I don't know, nearly 20 years of gaming. And the rest is probably over the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so much coming out. There's so much good stuff. There's a lot of stuff that I buy, and I used to keep a pile of this is what I will read next. And now that's become just like two shelves worth of this is what I read next.
Yep. And I need to take a year off just to catch up on reading. And that's a really nice problem to have. I really cannot complain.
Oh my God. And the dog, he's sneezing. God bless you, dog. Yeah. You okay now? I thought when I retired, the first thing that I would do, this is the idea, was I was going to watch the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings. I was like back to back, 2 days, marathons, nothing but beer, chips, and Tolkien. And yeah, that still hasn't happened.
When did you retire?
I started running time St. Patrick's Day of 2016.
Yeah, you're a little behind schedule.
Yeah, just a little bit. And, you know, I just find that there's too much on my plate. Like, I thought I was going to play a lot of my Xbox and my PS4. And I think my PS4 has been turned on the last year and a half. And my Xbox was off for a good year and a half. And now I'm using it mostly to watch Netflix in the living room.
Well,
it's not that I don't like the video games. Don't get me wrong. I do like them. It's just that, I don't know, if I'm binge watching stuff on Netflix, whatever it is, like right now, my latest binge watch is The Blacklist. I can find stuff in there that I can say, hey, I can write this down, and this is a thread that I could always pick up in one of my campaigns if I run it later. It's inspiration and stuff like that. I don't get inspiration from video games. I just put my head up and go, holy shit, I've been playing for 3.5 hours straight. I never moved, didn't get anything to drink, didn't take a leak. What the fuck just happened? And it's such an unproductive use of my time. If I'm going to be unproductive with my time, I'd rather nap. I'm serious. I feel more refreshed. And
to Pex's point there, I think that's the key. Is it's one of those things you never find time to do. You make time to do things. And again, I am a little bit outside of a lot of geek culture in the realm of video games. I haven't played video games in probably over 15 years. I was early 2000s, and I was kind of in and out of college for a while, so I was back in college at this point, and I didn't have money for it. And, you know, 50, 60 bucks a game, and something had to go, and it was either going to be beer. That's not going.
No, beer's not going anywhere.
And so it was going to be, especially in college, so it was either going to be my video games, RPGs, comic books. And I went, you know, RPGs are really pretty cheap. You know, not how much money I put into it now. At the time, you know, you can get by with a pencil and a pad of paper.
Yep.
And then comic books or video games, and it was which one I think I got more enjoyment out of. And man, I love comics. So I got out of video games, and it's just a thing I've never gone back to, which again is not to disparage people that really dig it. It's a well I never went back to.
You know, I went through a number of years. Like when I stopped regular gaming, basically when I got out of the police academy and I no longer had weekends off, and our group kind of, you know, took a hiatus that is still in effect. We wound up moving on to EverQuest on the computer. I was a late addition to that. When I came in to that, like my friends were all playing in it before 9/11. I didn't get into it until after 9/11. And I know that because one of my friends there from my old group that was playing EverQuest, we lost on 9/11. So once I got into massive multiplayer online RPGs, it was dangerous. And when I say it was dangerous, many of my friends before high-speed internet was common were getting second phone lines so we could talk to each other. Or talk to at least one person, right? And then I knew I was done. I was totally corrupted when EverQuest put out the Kunark update, and I could no longer play EverQuest because the update required a stronger video card than I had, and I had to buy a new video card. And I was at Best Buy or Circuit City, whatever it was, like the next day buying this card. I mean, on dial-up, it's taking, like, I don't know, 12 hours to update the Kunark update. And I was like, oh, man, I am so fucked. And then it was Anarchy Online. And then when high-speed internet hit and we got like that, I don't know, 5 megabyte upload speed on the local cable. It was now every Saturday and most Sundays, there we are, headsets yelling at each other in EverQuest. It was addictive and so much fun. But I didn't realize, I think the step that got me to the point that got me to step out of it was EverQuest 2, because I learned a great hack in EverQuest 2. My character was making gold hand over fist by, I guess it was like a gathering, creating deal. But I was basically vending stuff that people needed. But to vend, you had to be logged into the game. Your computer had to be online at this point. They changed it later. And so I would get up in the morning before going to work and log into the computer and get myself out there. And then I'd come back and there'd be another 1,000 gold in my account. Yeah. That's great. Until I got my electric bill. And when I got that electric bill, it was just like, holy fuck. It was over double what I would normally pay. And I was like, why the hell is it? And I went, oh, well, I guess my computer being on nearly 24/7 is probably what's doing it. And that's when I started taking a step back. And I don't do the MMOs anymore.
And I think, I know you've kind of touched on this in the past, I think part of that has also been, as far as filling that particular void, because, you know, time is precious and getting people to all meet up at the same time is a challenge. And this is the first time in a long time that I haven't had a face-to-face table game. For years, my in-house game was me and 5 of my buddies at the table. One of my buddies now lives in New Hampshire, so we started having everybody else show up at the table. And then we just ran Google Hangouts video and put Jimmy on a television at the end of the table.
Okay.
And then I just ran all the maps through Fantasy Grounds. So everybody's seeing the same thing. Jimmy sees it, everybody else sees it. You know, we're all kind of, and it let me draw a map ahead of time, which is advantageous for me. But now I don't have that in-person game. It is just online. But I think it kind of fills that same area where you and all your buddies can put on your headset. You can throw Cheetos at each other virtually and all those things. And it just works out better for us that way now because being that time is hard to come up with, setting aside an entire evening is a challenge, but we just get together. We play from 9 o'clock to midnight. Everybody's families are kind of settling down for the night and it's an easy enough time to just set that time aside without, you know, losing an entire day to it.
Oh yeah. And it's funny because like my old gaming group, we get together once a year in person. We're on an email chain daily. When 5e was out for maybe like 2 years, they started getting the itch to game again. One of my friends picked up the rules, and he's like, "Eric, you gotta run games for us again." I'm like, "Okay. Well, if you want to do it face to face, we could probably do it about once a month." He goes, No. We want to do it like when we played EverQuest." I go, "What the fuck do you mean?" He goes, "We want it on demand, basically. So it wants to be like, all right, hey, are we all free in half an hour? And we can pop in for an hour and a half?" I'm like, "Dude, you're welcome to play however you want. I cannot run games on demand." That, as a DM, it's one thing to pop into an MMO where everything is being done for you.
Right.
It's another one to have somebody as a GM suddenly have to prep or get into that mindset of running a game. I could not do it. They actually tried it, I think, for a couple of months, and I haven't seen it pop up in the email thread again. So in the last year or so. So I don't think that it lasted very long. But I'll ask him personally when we hang out at the end of this month.
But, yeah, that's a pretty tall order.
Yeah. And I told him, I go, "Listen, you know, I'm more than happy to run it. Won't be 5e. It would be Swords and Wizardry, a rule set that I don't have to even refer to during a game. And, you know, it has to be something that we schedule in advance. It could be, you know, twice a month. Like, oh, but, you know, again, it's like we want to play it like we play our MMOs. I'm like, well, then play an MMO because
it's a different edge.
Yeah, you know, but you know, we've gotten together every year since 9/11. We get together usually late May, early June for beer and chips and video games. And every year, I've brought something gaming related for everybody. I had to figure out what to pick up for them for this year. You know, just to, you know, pay tribute to how we came together back in our high school days. And that is really amazing that I'm still in touch with people that I gained with, my God, 30 plus years ago, 35 years ago.
You know, now that you mention it, my pseudo face-to-face group that we still play online now, but it was my face-to-face group. Three of those guys are high school buddies.
Yeah.
The joy of the modern era. Keep in touch across coast to coast.
Yeah, I mean, it's the our email group, and that's, you know, we talk Game of Thrones, and they talk a lot of the latest, I don't know, video games that they're playing. It's my original gaming group, and it's a couple of guys that were part of their EverQuest group. And now that's still going back. That I've known these even the people that are newer to the group, I've known for, I don't know, 18 years,
yeah,
or longer. And the interesting thing is, two of them live out by Dallas, so when I go to Texas, so every couple of years we hang out. And they gave us a tour of Fort Worth and the meatpacking or the whatever cattle area of Fort Worth. That was the first year we went. It's nice making those connections. Really, yeah, is.
It is.
And gaming is great for those connections. And I think when it comes to gaming conventions, that's where you get the chance to meet people in person that you already know, like us. Yeah, right. It's like meeting you in person wasn't like, oh, I'm meeting Laramie for the first time. It's like, oh, this is great. I know Laramie. I finally get to shake his hand.
I didn't do conventions for years. So I went late 90s. A buddy of mine took me to some fairly, it was state-sized gaming convention. And it was all... whatever the organized play thing D&D ran was at the time. And I sat down and I played like, I don't know, two or three sessions. Man, this is just not a game I want to play. It's so strict and rigid. And I mean, you're running a module. So it, I mean, by definition, it has to be on the rails. and all your equipment's a certificate. And, well, yeah, but I want to take that one thing out of there. Well, yeah, you can't because it doesn't have a certificate. What's not the point? It's just a cool little it's a token that I took out of some guy's house.
Right.
That's not my game. And again, it's cool that people enjoy it. It's just not for me. And so I just didn't go to conventions for years and years and years, with the exception of some buddies and I run what we like to call CheapCon. It is a bunch of my buddies that used to go to Winter Fantasy, and then Winter Fantasy moved out to a coast. They couldn't afford to go anymore, so they started running games in my buddy's basement. And then it grew out of that, and it's now, I think last year we had, at the point we had the most amount of people at a given moment, I think we had 65 people in the building.
Wow.
It has become I believe the kids refer to it as a thing. And it's CheapCon because the entrance every year is whatever year number the event is in cents. So this year is CheapCon 17, cost 17 cents to get in. We are lucky to be in a community center that a buddy of mine lives in a housing development for, so we don't have to pay overhead for that. And it's basically just, we all get together, a group of us all run games. Anybody that wants to run a game, we're welcome to. And we play Thursday. We are on three slots a day, 4 hours apiece, starting Thursday morning through Sunday afternoon. And that was my only convention for years and years, up until a couple years ago. I kept on hearing all these great things about Game Hole. So a couple years ago, I started going to Game Hole, and that is definitely my speed. It's casual. It's relaxed. You can wander around. You can have a drink. You sit and shoot the shit with your buddies. It's just a hoot. I'd really like to make it down to North Texas sometime, but I am fortunate that with two young children, I am lucky enough that I get away for one long weekend.
Sure.
I don't think I'm going to press my luck with two at the moment, but North Texas is definitely one of those things that's on my radar to hit.
Yeah, North Texas is a very special place, and they all are. They all have, when I say all, the three major ones that are OSR themed all have something special going for them. With North Texas, it's the size. It's a smaller con with the same number of special guests. So you can walk up to any of these, you know, historical figures in gaming or current people like Jeff Talanian, and just start a conversation with them. They're there for you to talk with. Game Hall is extremely well run, extremely well organized, and if you're staying at the hotel that's attached to it, my wife gets to go exploring in Madison, anywhere within 3 miles. The hotel shuttle takes her. So
nice.
Rach has to explore. Gary Khan is at the old Playboy Club. Or states or whatever. You know, it's got a great atmosphere. It's maybe not quite as organized as its Game Hole, but the history is amazing. The gaming history that you really feel a part of is just can't be beat.
Well, and I think they're
all special.
I think a lot of that is what an individual brings to the situation. And, you know, I hear a lot of guys talking about going to something like Gary Khan, and it's a lot of people there to just have a good time, have fun, have a good weekend. And while I've heard a lot of people that have complained about the organization, but all those guys are, you know, I really wish this would have been better, and I wish that the login situation would have been better, this and that. And that's unfortunate, but whatever, I'm still going. You know, it's a minor irritation, but it's not as though it's severely to their detriment.
Well, you know, at this point for me, I don't really go. I'll run games because Frog God Games has me running games, but I don't go to playing games as a player. I'm going to these conventions to meet the community, meet the tavern's community and beyond. To me, that's where I take my joys at, and it's
social.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a chance to socialize with my gamers face to face. My gamers, they're mine. Oh my!
I refer to, if any of my coworkers ask me what I'm doing on a weekend like that, I just say nerd convention. And that puts an end to all the questions. They're content with that response.
Yeah, see, I've actually said gaming convention and like, oh, you gamble? No. Let's try this again. And then you go Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, listen, the best, I guess, kind of story I have on this, and I'll try to make it quick, but I served jury duty a year and a half ago, and I got picked for, you know, one of the panels to be questioned, and they get to me, and they're like, oh, so it says you're retired. I'm like, yeah. What are you retired from? I'm like, yeah, NYPD. I left as a sergeant. And, you know, your assignments, yada, yada, yada. What do you do now? I'm tired. He goes, well, but you have to be doing something. I'm like, well, yeah, I kind of semi-freelance for a gaming company. He goes, gaming company? Like, again, like gambling? I'm like, no, like Dungeons and Dragons. Now the guy, like, he sits up. You know, he was, like, slouched over the table before he goes, Dungeons and Dragons? I'm like, yeah, so what do you do? I go, oh, I've written a little bit of, you know, little product, little set of rules, and I get to go to, you know, three conventions a year. Company pays for the food, the hotel room, my convention fees. He goes, well, let me get this straight. You wrote one thing, and this is what you're getting? yeah, I got to work the table for vending. He goes, all right, so... And this is what you're doing in retirement, right? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I want to retire like you.
Hell, man, I want to retire like you. That man's not wrong.
No. It was actually kind of – it was very sweet. Got a couple of people on the panel laughing. And then, of course, like, oh, shit, they picked me. I thought the moment I was like, oh, retired cop and a goofy gamer? We don't want this guy. they picked me, damn it. Well, sir, we actually went from questions to sandbox without even transitioning. It was so smooth.
Hey, man, if there's one thing I am, it's smooth.
Well, there you go. Oh. I really don't know how smooth I am. I certainly have two left feet when I dance. I'm a lefty, so maybe it's better than two right feet. You know, I'm generally not smooth, but just so you know, I'm not sure exactly when this episode's going to go up, but it probably be right before or right after our 365th episode. So yes, and this before this week is out, the second year of Tavern Chat will have started.
I'm going to throw in your questions at you then. So you've got almost got a year in on the podcast daily. I think you had a post the other day saying you've got nearly 10 years in the blog.
Yep.
What about teenage Tenkar? Could you fathom the influence that you have managed? And not like you're, you know, swaying everyone's lives, but you've got a good following. You've got a pretty phenomenal community and crowd. What about teenage Tenkar, where he's at now?
Teenage Tenkar would be looking at this and saying, you did all this and you never had to move out to Lake Geneva? How the fuck did that happen? I mean, how did any of this come to pass like it has? And I think the teenage me would not be able to comprehend the change, where I'm at. Teenage me would be like, nah, this. Well, teenage me wouldn't even have thought that I would have become a cop. Teenage me thought I was going to be working for the phone company. All right, so follow my father's footsteps. And it almost came to be.
My dad worked for the phone company.
Yeah,
he's a lineman. Yeah,
my father worked inside on the frame and the switch.
Right on.
But true story. I had tested for cable splicer and cable splicer assistant. 4.5 months into the police academy, I get an early morning phone call on a day that I'm working a 4 to 12 in the academy, and it was Bell Atlantic at the time. It was Bell Atlantic calling to tell me that I was being hired the cable splicer, and I was starting the next following Monday. And I was like, oh. If you had called like 2 months earlier when the gym was killing me and I had shin splints, she's like, what? I go, I'm in the police academy. You can't offer me 4 weeks of vacation to start, can you? She's like, no. You can't offer me a pension of 50% my salary for the rest of my life when I retire with healthcare, can you? She's like, we're not that good, not 20 years. I'm like, and you don't offer me the ability to carry a gun, do you? She's like, no. So I go, I'll have to pass.
But I was, you know, man, like you were saying, it's weird to think where it's at now compared to, you're right, like 25 years ago, everything flowed through Lake Geneva.
Yep.
You know, it's a lot of industries are like that. You know, again, I'm a big comic book guy. If you wanted to go work for Marvel, you were moving to New York because that's where everything went through. And now, you know, like we were saying earlier with small press and everything else and being able to just transfer everything instantaneously via internet, you can live wherever you want, man. Like, you can just get it done.
you're totally right on that, man. And it's amazing. Again, if you had asked me 10 years ago when I kicked off the blog, if I ever thought it would be successful and influential, I would have been like, no fucking way. If you asked me when I kicked off the podcast, if I thought I would be consistently doing daily episodes and doing interviews like this, I don't think I could have done that either. I wouldn't have believed it even a year ago. If you asked me if the Discord server would be as successful as it is, it's all these things coming together in a perfect combination.
Yeah.
And really, it can't be beat. It really can't be.
And again, like, you know, like you kind of hit on earlier, man, the community itself is just phenomenal.
Oh, it's an amazing community. And really, I couldn't be happier being a part of it. And this is coming from somebody who spent 20 years in law enforcement. And that is an amazing community. It's very tight. You have to be. And everybody is helping each other. Even people that you personally dislike on one or more levels, when it's true need, when it's a family member that needs medical care that isn't being fully covered by insurance or whatever these issues are, they come together. And it's the same thing in gaming. And the transition between the two, it's remarkably small. And I feel very comfortable. So it's all good. I'm very happy.
Right on. It's amazing. You've done a hell of a job, Barkeep.
Don't ask me how to repeat it because I have no idea how we got here, but I'm not complaining. As I've told people, you know, in the past, if you want to be a successful blogger, you got to blog. You know, you got to do it. You just can't talk about it, and you got to be passionate about your subject. And I'm passionate about gaming, and I'm passionate about our community. So I might not always be spot on and perfect with what I do, but I think the overall is pretty
good. Well, I think there's, as far as perfection goes, sure, but I also don't think, I think there is a space where you also have the acknowledgement of going, accepting the fact of errors that have been made. You look your mistakes in the eye and you own them. And I think that also carries a lot of weight and has ended up with you in the position you're in because you are not a person that takes an error, deflects it, and says, oh, I was misunderstood, or, oh, I was taken out of context. No, you look in the eye and you say, yeah, man, I fucked up, and we're going to do better. And you just keep doing better. And as long as you keep doing better, that's how improvement happens.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I actually learned that from my commanding officer, my captain, that with the one kidney, the Irishman, because he would stand behind you on just about. I mean, I watched him literally on a phone tell a one-star chief to go fuck himself. Not in those words, but much more politely, protecting two of his cops that had, you know, done what he asked of them, but the borough didn't want summonses being written to prostitutes or whatever it was. And watched my captain, because these guys fell on the sword. They accepted whatever's going to happen. He's like, Chief, I changed their detail. They report directly to me. So if you want to be able to put them on paper, you're going to have to put the commanding officer of the forward precinct on paper, because I'm not doing it. And because he allowed these guys, you know, and they worked for, they did what they thought he wanted. They meant well by it, but they were wrong. And they took responsibility for it, and they fell on the sword. And as such, our captain basically said, I'm not going to hurt these guys, because they owned up to their mistake. They manned up. And I've always respected that, and I've always looked at that. And, you know, you can hide from your mistakes, but they're always going to haunt you.
No, you can't.
If you don't own them. You know, they're always going to be in the background, eating away at your soul. So fucking own it.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's perfect. I am certainly far from perfect. And there's no instruction book on how to, be influential in an online community. There's no book that tells you the ins and outs. It's all, you know, by trial and error. So if I didn't own my shit, I'd always be called on my shit. And again, I know I'm not perfect, and the best I can do is the best I can do. And that will definitely mean I will fuck up at times. Part of the process.
But part of that is also, you know, as far as you getting called out on your shit, that's kind of part of how you've gotten to the position you are, is just keeping everybody honest. You know, if you weren't accepting your own errors, someone else would be pointing them out for you, because that's, you know, I think the gaming community has to be responsible for doing that. And I don't want to get into all the drama of everything that's happened with, you know, this personality or that personality, but that's part of what it is taking, you kind of got to self-police, because if you don't self-police, the entire community falls apart.
No, and you're certainly right on that. And then, and we could go really deep into this, and we probably could, and maybe later on we will, but I got to go to physical therapy.
That sounds like a great idea. You hit that PT, man.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because when I retired, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. And I was just like, hey, I'm retired, and parts of my body are slowly falling apart. Jeez, this is what old age is about, right? I go, your 50s, and now it's like having your car. And it's like, oh, damn, now I need new brakes. I've had it for how many years? Now I need a tune-up. Now the brake light's going off, and and I replace a headlight. Yeah, I'm realizing that's what happens to the human body. So
the key is to make sure it's falling apart slowly. If it's falling apart fast, you got issues. Just make sure you keep falling apart slowly.
No, I'm working on the slowly part, but we'll see. Well, Laramie, listen, thank you. This was really good, and like I said, we could probably have gone on for at least another 30 minutes. Would have been our longest episode yet, which means that we'll have to reschedule you for more sandbox conversation that is geek and gaming related, because we do it so well.
Apparently.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, and I will see you. If I don't talk to you before then, I will definitely see you at Game Hole.
You'll see me in the Discord server.
Like I said, we'll talk, I'm sure.
But yeah, we'll talk. All right, folks. As always, stay safe, be well, God bless, roll those dice, and we'll be back tomorrow. Later, folks.